with mixed groups in ways that have been very educational for me and reaffirming for me. I don't know if I'm conveying what happens, but when I hear some of the other religious views of life, I'm so glad I'm Jewish. And I feel
it seems to make more sense to you.
Oh, definitely. And when I think of, you know, the concept of being born with original sin and of some of the other concepts which I understand more about, but I'm so glad that I'm Jewish and have reaffirmed my religious feelings. I did, and in the process, I began to know some rabbis personally, which I never did before. So that I'm comfortable with the religious institutional structures.
Does that include going occasionally to services
Yes, indeed it does. And whenever there's a subject that's going to be discussed and I'm interested in, I go. And I'm going this Friday night. It's Saul's yard site, and I go when my parents have a yard site. But I go when the rabbi or another speaker is going to be talking about a topic I care about.
Did your children marry Jewish spouses?
The two older boys married Jewish girls. Ralph married a Chinese who has no religion of her own and is very happy to be identified as a Jew, and we considered conversion, but they were both lawyers and working very hard and with a family, and actually it turned out to be a matter of time for them. When they enrolled their children in Sunday school, and they enrolled all three, they became active in the Wilshire Temple in Los Angeles, which is a historic one, very similar to Rod of Shalom.
Yes, I'm familiar with it.
And enjoy the rabbis, have great respect for them, have gone on family retreats, live a Jewish life, have always celebrated the Jewish holidays with other. They consider some of their groups mixed. One of their very close friends are Jewish. Both are Jewish, but one is observant and the other isn't. And so they're kind of a mixed couple in that way. But they observe all the holidays in this very extended group of theirs that makes me feel very good.
You had no trouble adapting to intermarriage.
No, Bonnie was so much like us, and her parents said they were so happy, and their only other daughter also married a Jew, and they were very happy because they saw a similarity in the cultural values of their people and ours. Respect for age, interest in education, the book, ethical living. Confucianism is not a religion, it's a philosophy. And they had no other religion that they were giving up.
In other words, they were more interested in the concepts and ideas
very
other than the...
And found their own life values almost the same as ours. And my daughter married a doctor whom she met when she was a student at Montefiore, and he was head of the chief resident. And he wanted to convert. It was his idea. He wanted to have no difference in their marriage. And Rabbi Fuchs conducted the conversion. And they were married in Temple Sinai. And as a result, the other two children here and me, who had been unaffiliated for a while, all joined Temple Sinai. So there are four families who joined Temple Sinai as a result of Mark's conversion by Rabbi Fuchs. And Temple Sinai has a philosophy, a board policy, that they will not have a rabbi who doesn't do intermarriages. Rabbi Fuchs married Edie and Mark. It's an unusual policy, but it's not. We're not the only one like that in the country. And when we interview for rabbis, about a third of the rabbis who are available will say they will do inter-religious marriages, and the other two-thirds. So they are eliminated from consideration. Now, the ones who do the intermarriages have strong restrictions on the way in which they will do them and who they will do them for. And basically, it's restricted to children of members and to those who are going to live in a community, and a membership, a year's membership, is offered to them, and there's a great deal of outreach. But the feeling
of interesting.
Rabbi Jacobs will not do this.
I know that.
And Edie, as I say, their marriage occurred a month or two before Mark's course in Edinburgh was completed. But we were grateful that he went ahead. The timing was right for us. And Mark is more interested than the rest of us are on being more traditional. And in our Friday night services, not only do he and all the children repeat all the blessing, but Mark has added one that he heard the rabbi give in blessing the children, and all the children know that one by heart, and it's really very nice, and he wishes he were more...
Is he a psychiatrist, too?
No, he's a cardiologist.
Cardiologist.
But he also... We never had the experience of a family, of the family of the other spouse, having problems, because Mark's family, although they were Episcopalian, they had not been identified with the church for many years and had no problems at all. We're just happy Mark was finding religion he liked. So that some of the real agonizing
that goes...
That
worked out beautifully.
Worked out beautifully.
You.
The real agonizing that occurs when there are two religions competing has difficulties. But we didn't have that case. We had no competition.
Is this a situation that has come up? This intermarriage has... This subject come up in the UJ, in this organization,
in the
United AJC? Jewish Committee. Yeah.
It is a constant discussion in every Jewish organization, because 50% of our marriages now are mixed marriages. And the statistics on whether
this would be for all religions then? Or
yeah,
just
well,
Jewish?
Sure. Well, it's 50% of the Jews.
Protestants...
You know,
want to know something? It's 60%.
Is it?
That's a new statistic.
Well,
makes you sicker.
And there's some different statistics. You see, a lot of the marriages bring conversions into the religion, as Mark came in. Rather than losing one, we gained one. But the rate of those kind of conversions is apparently slipping. For a while, it was going up, and there were lots of gains for Jews. Incidentally, the Temple Sinai Board's philosophy is that with half of their children marrying out of the faith, it was important not to lose their child.
It's surprising,
and to
because
keep that child
other
in.
Organizations and religious organizations do not go along with that, so far as I know, in the community.
Well, Temple Sinai was severely criticized. One of our rabbis, there have been enough modifications that our rabbi is a part of the rabbinic council, but in the very beginning, I don't believe he was, a long time ago.
Very interesting.
Our kids are very strong Jews. They've all been to Israel. They're children, not Ralph's young children, and Edie's young children, but Edie lived a year in Israel. All the boys spend time in a kibbutz, and are very strongly identified with Jewish issues. They care about it, and they're sensitive, and their radar is out just as much as with our generation. You know, you can hear something in the air that other people might not hear, and that's what we attune some of the African Americans to. And to some of these Christian clergymen, too. They really didn't realize where we were
hurting. Very worthwhile. And I think that the aspect of all these things is terribly important to the Jewish community.
And I think it's very worthwhile. It's important to me.
At some other, we might continue with this, for which would be a tremendous asset to the Hillman Library, to the, you know,
well,
tapes,
yes,
to
but within, of
learn
course,
of this.
Within the CRC minutes or the AJC minutes, you would find this kind of discussion. I mean, it goes on all the time, and great efforts are made.
Yeah, well, this should be well noted, because yeah. I don't know that this is...
But a man whom I respect very much in another group which I'm in, AJC has a commentary discussion group, and we meet once a month, again with about 20 people. That's the most you can have for a discussion. And we discuss an article in Commentary Magazine, which people on the group in the group may have strong feelings, differing feelings about. But a man in that group said to me, how could I, feeling as Jewish as I do feel, spend so much time in a non-Jewish community? And I thought about it, and I went home and looked
over. You mean he's feeling guilty?
He said, yes, you should be spending your time. He didn't make me feel guilty, but he thought I should be, because he said, you should be spending your time in the Jewish community. And I went home, and I looked.
That's a very biased point of view.
Well, it's that inward look. And actually, he's a very, in his secular life, he is very much a part of his field. He's a leading writer and thinker. But I looked at my activities, and I realized, I'm looking at them, that they were just about split, half and half. Half are Jewish and half are not. And that's the way I want it to be, because I want to be a part of my total community.
Well, I think you're an important instrument in fostering a healthy relationship in the community.
That's what I think.
And that's extremely important, and this individual was quite short-sighted in
my Well, it was an interesting point of view.
There are many
he's very broad-minded in so many things. On this, he questioned me.
Religion is the source of the most emotional reaction of any subject that
and
you can discuss.
In the current election, the turn that some of the oratory from the Republican Party has taken is very frightening in terms of Pat Buchanan's religious crusade, which has overtones for our community of great danger.
Well, I can understand why. It's this whole aspect of religion and the problems it may cause with people, and you know, it's a source of wars and conflicts constantly, and I think that for the community to address itself, and for you as an individual to get yourself involved, that you are a very good representative of this type of...
Yeah. Leaving the religious subject for just a minute, around 1982 or 83, the Pittsburgh Foundation, which I was not very familiar with other than it is a community foundation which anybody in the community can give money and have a named fund, set up a new foundation called the Forbes Fund, because in 1982 government funds became restricted for all agencies, and all the social service agencies in Pittsburgh were finding that although where they had budgeted a certain amount, they weren't getting what they counted on from the government and were going to go under. And the Forbes Fund was created to rescue those social service agencies. The Pittsburgh Foundation put in $150,000 was put in between the Pittsburgh Foundation and the two Heinz Foundations. And they established this fund for agencies who were meeting a financial crisis due to cutbacks in their funds to come and apply for help. And we gave them loans. We gave them outright grants to carry over until, you know, government payments are frequently behind time, and they couldn't pay their staff if the government money was going to be 3 months late. And we would give them a loan to tide them over so they could stay in business, because the government money eventually did come through. And that expanded into...
And they repaid their loans.
Some were grants, the loans were all repaid. In some cases, they lent, borrowed money from the bank, and the Forbes Fund said, we will guarantee the loan. We will pay just the interest on the loan. And then the agency didn't have to pay interest, got the money, and then was able to stay afloat. Many, many organizations, at first it was just the small ones, but then the big ones came for such interim crisis help to the Forbes Fund. The Pittsburgh Foundation had three of their trustees on that Forbes Fund. Sholem, Comey, and I were invited to be on that beginning Forbes Fund. And some very other interesting people, the head of Goodwill, the mayor's assistant, the county assistant, the commissioners have a social service person who was on that board. The mayor has had a assistant who was on that board, and several other, the YWCA executive was on the Forbes Fund. It was a broad representation of people who were in the field as professions, and a few like Sholem and me who simply had a lot of community experience. And after a year or two on that Forbes Fund, the Pittsburgh Foundation trustees in the first place were tremendously impressed with a group of people they had assembled, because they were getting hands-on knowledge about the actual workings out in the field of what was happening. And they decided to enlarge the Pittsburgh Foundation board and invited me. I was the third woman on the board, and Sholem and I then became two Jews on the Pittsburgh Foundation board. And Sholem ultimately became chair, and I am now vice chair. And it was a board of only nine before. Sholem and I made it 11, and then it was expanded further to have African Americans on. There are now a total of 15 on that board. A very interesting cross section of it, some very wealthy people, and a total cross section of the community. And the Pittsburgh Foundation and the Forbes Fund together have their finger on the pulse of everything going on in the city, in not only the social service field, but, you know, council has received many grants from the Pittsburgh Foundation. But it's not only the social service field, it's the arts field of the world, too. The symphony comes, the opera comes, and Heinz Foundations have probably given bigger amounts of money to the York, because they have more money than Pittsburgh Foundation, but we complemented each other in the kinds of grants we gave. But being in that position on those two organizations, I sort of feel like I'm at the pulse of everything going on in town.
Oh, I can understand why.
And
that's
I
wonderful.
Just enjoy it. You know, I'm not doing this, you know, to be good or to get anything.
Right.
I enjoy it more than playing bridge or playing golf. I just love this kind of activity, so that it has just become my life.
Well, I think it's not only great for you, but it's also great for the community.
I went on the WQED board and the Pittsburgh Public Theater and the Pittsburgh Opera.
And the symphony?
No, not the
You're
symphony.
You're not anymore.
But I am and have been for many years on the Board of Visitors of the Pittsburgh School of Social Work. When social work was my field, the people in the social work school are right out in the field consulting on the projects that the Pittsburgh Foundation and the Forbes Fund fund, so that it's an interrelationship that is it's rewarding for the program. We got very interested in the Mon Valley Community Towns, which the School of Social Work was interested in studying. Pittsburgh and the Heinz Foundation, Senator Heinz was very interested in doing something for the Mon Valley. So we, all these proposals for programs to develop leadership in Clareton, or to get the Mon Valley schools together to give better education, or to do something in McKeesport, that's all a part of this activity. And some of these others just join in. So then, you know, the solution to some of these problems, so a lot of them are early childhood intervention. And there's another delightful program that was started by two people, and you know, Lillian Friedberg's daughter-in-law, Joanne Friedberg.
I know Jen very well. I worked with Jen.
And they started beginning with books. And, you know, it's to teach mothers to read and the children to read and to do things together. Council has such a project, teaching mothers in the project, how important it is to read with their children. So I'm the beginning with the books board. And then there's the Center for Victims of Violent Crime, which is a more recent thing I read, because it's for people who've just been attacked and hurt. And this organization sends people to court with them and helps them. And then the Forbes Hospice. Oh, well, I'll come back to this in a minute.
Now, have you been on, you're active?
Or I'm on the boards on all of this. And I go to the meetings. And now, I don't do mailings. I don't do a lot of the hard work that's necessary to run an organization, but I sit on all policy discussions on these kinds of things.
Wow.
And then the Forbes Hospice came to me at the last month of Saul's life. Our doctor said there was nothing. Saul was home all the time. We just went into the hospital for the chemo treatments. But at the end, they said there was nothing further they could do, if anything could be done, but that they referred me to the Forbes Hospice. You know, when I want to stay home, and I'm the only one going to take care of Saul. And I said, I've been referred to you, but I don't know whether I really want your help. And they said, our mission is to enable people to stay home. We want to help you do that. And they sent someone out who was so helpful in sort of telling me what I needed to anticipate. And they gave me some things which I needed to make it possible. And they were very good with Saul, and he said, you know, it's a pleasure to deal with a real match, because the volunteers who came out and the executive who came out were all very well-educated, personable people. It wasn't like working with a lot of the people
I've
in
heard
the
that they answer a tremendous need in the community.
They're just a wonderful organization. And several years afterwards, they came to me. They had our rabbi set up meeting with me and Barry Roth, who's head of Forbes, the whole Forbes Hospital thing, and they said, we want to ask you if you would be chair of a new organization that we'd like to found, and that's the Forbes Hospice Founders Society, because the Forbes Hospital system runs a deficit of $250,000 a year taking care of cancer and other dying patients. We'd run out of insurance, and we had 8 beds. We don't turn anyone away, and the hospital picks up the deficit. But we'd like to form an endowment for the Forbes Hospice. And they had never charged me anything. I said, you know, you never asked me to pay, you know, for those visits I had. And they said, it was the doctors we had started the hospice in the first place. And so it was a complimentary kind of thing they were giving me, but I felt I owed it to them to say yes. So I became the first chair, and for 2 years we began to raise money for the Forbes Hospice, and at this point, and I left after 2 years, although I'm still on the committee. And
what's the name? Do we have the exact name of the organization?
Here's my list, and I can give you a copy.
Forbes Hospice Founders Society.
That's exactly.
That's right.
And
yeah,
we now have almost $1 million. We're getting close to, we set our goal, $1 million, the interest of which is.
Where do you get your money from the hospice? Where do they get their money?
We're raising this from people. We send out mailings.
Do they get money from the United Way?
No. The hospital all along picked up the difference between what people could pay and what the service that they gave. But now, the Founders Society now can pay for that because we've raised enough money. Now, when we
You have separate drives, are we?
Yes, separate mailing, and people give, they can give either to the endowment of $1 million and only the interest of that will be spent, or they can give to the general operating cost. And that's just spent every year. That I got into the medical field, and I was put on the Montefiore Hospital board really to fill Saul's place, and because he had been on it for years. And I was put on a committee that was called the Human Resources Committee, which oversees the experiments, the research experiments that are done in the hospital. And I learned all kinds of medical stuff. You know, we were just to, the purpose of the committee was to make sure that the patient was adequately informed before they signed a paper saying, sure, you can do this research on me, or I will enter this. It was to make sure that the patient's rights were carefully guarded. And the committee was consisted of the doctors on the staff, the ones who were doing the research. And I learned all about the experiments they were doing, a lot of them related to cancer. And I learned about the necessary responsibility the hospital has to take before a patient should be induced to join a research experiment.
You're talking about the Montefiore.
I'm talking about Montefiore
research.
The Montefiore Hospital, yes, and it's all hospitals have to have this. And then later, right now, I just accepted being on the cancer Cancer Institute, which is going to be centered in Montefiore.
Have you gotten involved in any of
the support
tremendous? No, from the entirely different aspect of the cost, the tremendous cost
of medicine,
no. And hospital costs, for instance.
No,
you haven't involved yourself in that.
But after Montefiore Hospital was sold, all the board members of the Montefiore moved over en masse to be the board of the Jewish Healthcare Foundation.
Is that
and
right?
And as their terms expired, they were replaced with other people. My term expired after the first year of the Jewish Healthcare Foundation, but I was on that in its initiation. And that, again, was... You know, it's just an interesting
so
thing that affects
one
infects
thing
you.
Leads to
well,
another.
That's my point. One thing
you,
leads to
you
another.
Pick up,
and they're all interrelated. You know,
right.
So you're on. Then
indeed.
I was asked to be on a cancer support network where this lady has, and I'm not really doing anything. I'm on an honorary board just for the name. But there's a group of people who are cancer survivors who meet and talk to each other about the problems they meet.
Is that the Cancer Institute?
It's the Cancer Support Network.
Right, okay, that's...
But then I also was just invited onto the Cancer Institute,
okay,
and I just accepted I haven't been
good,
to a meeting yet.
That's
how it leads, things lead to another.
Well,
then
that's,
the other
that's
thing
important,
I
because what you're saying is that you don't get into an activity to put in a certain amount of time willy-nilly. You get into an activity because it has
a purpose.
It has a meaning and
yeah,
and has
yeah.
been gotten from
and,
transferred from
right.
one situation to another very
right and
normally.
Right. And because I want to accomplish something in that field.
That's the basic purpose and value of volunteerism.
That's right. And you know, it all started with Council of Jewish Women. That's how, by being there, I entered this other world. And it really made my life very meaningful for me. I also, this is a side thing, I got onto the Historical Society Board. And you know, the history of Pittsburgh is very interesting to me.
Oh, yes.
And I love it, and I want everything that is Pittsburgh to be recorded and insured. And, you know, we just bought a building, and there's going to be a 20-minute drive. No, on the Strip District, on Smallman
the
Street.
The Strip District,
yeah.
That's right.
But it's only a block from the convention center, so that people visiting Pittsburgh can go and see our historical museum.
It's a very good idea.
I love that. You know, it's not accomplishing things for the human condition, but I like it. It's important.
Well, there are several.
Then the other big thing that I just joined, and it's just because, it's all because of the relationship. In January, I joined the Community College of Allegheny County. And I really didn't want that, because I'd been asked before, and I just didn't want that much work. But
that's a great institution.
But it's and they began telling me about it, and Bob Nelkin, who is Forster's assistant, you know Art Nelkin?
I've known the name.
Well, Bob Nelkin is just a wonderful man, and he's Forster's associate who handles all the money which goes to human relations and social services. And he said, look, he said, here's where the women and the black women and the poor women, by going to community college, find their way out. You should be there, because that's what I've been involved in. And by
right.
being on the Pittsburgh Foundation with a particular program officer whom I'm very close with, he said, you could figure up programs that community college would undertake. Pittsburgh Foundation would help fund to do that. And that that was an offer I couldn't refuse.
It's
so I just went on that. Tremendous. I'm absolutely
need
amazed.
In the community,
you know,
for education for all kinds of people that would
people
not
like
have
us
access
who just
to higher
there
education.
Are poor people, but there are people like us.
Right.
I think they're up to 109,000 students
is
in Allegheny
right?
County. That's some people are only taking one class, some two, and some are full time.
Are they in good financial straits compared
well,
to other
their
colleges?
Main money is from the state and the county. It's
yeah,
government
they get a
money.
Large,
but they're starting a big building campaign, as everybody eventually does, which they want private money, and we're starting a big campaign. But I'm not involved in the campaign. My area of interest is the quality of the courses.
Right. You have no... will you do some fundraising?
Not
for
me. Somebody else.
I don't mean in connection with community college.
Oh, yes,
I mean,
I do. Forbes Hospice was fundraising.
Forbes Hospice, I
and
think.
Everything eventually comes to somewhere you've got to put up some people who will support.
Oh, yeah.
It's hard, but... You can do it if
right.
you believe in it, and if you don't mind being turned down, you know.
Right.
now,
I
that ends the tables.
I
listen, let's see if it records.